Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. You know about First Take, but what about First Take, Her Take? It's a brand new podcast hosted by Charlie Arnold, Kimberly Martin, and Chinne Agwemeke. They discuss and debate the biggest sports stories and have conversations about their lives as well as culture. Download and subscribe to First Take, Her Take, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from Detroit, Michigan. Check him out at Yahoo Sports. Vinny Goodwill, what's going on, man?
What's happening, man?
Good, man. How you been?
Got some stuff to talk about, don't we?
Yeah, man. Happy New Year. Let's go ahead and get that out the way.
Oh, yeah. It is a new year. This feels like an extension of 2020, though. Let's be perfectly honest. This feels like the 7th week of December.
Yeah. something has changed, though, right? So let's not pretend like it's all the same.
That is true.
Let me tell you something that's actually kind of funny here. I'm not picking on Gabe a little bit, but you understand where I'm coming from. We had an email. Gabe sends the email out to us about getting the recording done, and we had to do it at a little bit of a different time today. And Gabe sent it out. It said 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central. And I was like, but Vinny in Detroit, and that's on the East. But I did not realize Detroit was like a Eastern time zone city until like 5 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, dog. Midwest. It sounds like West. You know what I'm saying? like Midwest. Like, every now and then I have something happen where I look at a map and I'm like, I didn't realize that's exact. Like, I know what your state looked like, but I guess right. I didn't know where it was.
Well, the crazy thing was moving to Chicago when I moved there, like, I think maybe 5 or 6 years ago, the biggest thing for me was the time zone change. Like, losing that hour. I didn't see you're thinking about it being, like, in a different time zone. I'm looking at Chicago like, well, why ain't Chicago on the Eastern time zone? It's literally, like, a state away. Like, this doesn't make sense.
Right.
And then when I moved to New York, I was like, wait a minute. I get that extra hour. Man, my body was all types of jacked up every day, waking up at 5:30 on one side and then waking up an hour later than I should have. No, like that was an adjustment, man. That 1 hour makes a hell of a difference.
Man, I love the Central time zone. I ain't going to lie. I absolutely love because them late games.
Houston. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, but them late games ain't that late no more.
They still late, man.
They still late, but 11 and 12 is a big difference. You know what I'm saying?
That second TNT game, that I feel like that's what you're referring
yes.
to.
Yes.
That
yes.
second yes. TNT game on a Thursday night. Like, either way, you're going to wake up to Charmed or Law and Order or something like that.
Yes.
But going to sleep on that second game, you're like, whoo. Yeah. It's only the third quarter?
Yo,
and it's after midnight?
Yo, yeah. This is the thing, man. We had the bubble. The bubble got us out of that late playoff game situation, but we ain't got no bubble no more. These playoffs going to come around and kick our asses like the playoffs have always kicked our asses late.
And it's going to be in the summer, too. Like, the playoffs starting a month later, assuming it starts in May as opposed to April, which means we're going to be doing this thing in June. You know, after all the time zone changes and everything else, man, we gonna be beat down. Like, I think it was maybe 2013, maybe it was the second Heat year where the playoff games caught up to me. And I'm watching, like, the West Finals, and I'm watching, and I'm like, why am I struggling to keep my eyes awake? Like, you know, like, I was like, is this age?
No.
Or is this something different?
When I was doing morning radio, that was when it was rough. Right, like that was the one because we were talking about all the series. Like, we had a very basketball heavy show, and I do not like talking about things I did not see. So I'd be up and I'd be up, and then I'd had to get up. It was lucky I was doing that show out the house. I wake up at 6:55 and just take my funky breath over there and be like, cool, let's rock, let's go. You know what I'm saying? And, like, that's where I feel like we're going to wind up this year. Now, I don't think they're going to push nothing back because it sounds like Adam Silver is just like, okay, we just going to have to go ahead and get the vaccine ahead of people. Fine, if that's just what it's going to be. Like, I think something that has happened that nobody really expected is the number of people who were apprehensive about taking the vaccine. And so now, you saw this where basically the NBA seems to be on a kick where they want to go ahead and get it done, if for no other reason than to let black people know it's okay to mm-hmm. take the vaccine, because we have a historically supported skepticism in many cases of taking the vaccine or whatever it is. And I got to say, that is stupid. Now, it's not that I don't understand where people are coming from, right? But if you're in the same line as the white man in order to get this vaccine, I think you are right.
Me and you have talked about this. Put me in the line where the rich white people is at.
Yeah.
Whatever line that you see, like Alec Baldwin and Kate Hudson, random rich white folks.
Yeah.
I'm standing in the line with them. This ain't that hard.
Mm-mm. I don't even need them to be rich. Right? Like they're not about to be out here guinea pigging them in that way. I don't see that happening. Again, I get where everybody comes mm-hmm. from, where they have their skepticism. Adam Silver gonna let every single one of them know, y'all are being stupid. Take this shot so we can get this money, please.
And I did this story with Michelle Roberts, the head of the NBPA, and I was asking her about this vaccine. She's 60, like 62, 63. And she was like, look, man, I'm not a cheerleader for this. Like, I want to wait and see, take a little bit more time. Like, I got skepticism. She's a little bit more rage against the machine type of thing. You know what I mean? She's one of those types. But even still, you know what happens if you don't take the damn vaccine? We got 400,000. That's evidence. Like, why take the chance?
I've been very surprised that in so many places, you got so many people who are like, nah, I'm good on that, right? Like, I've seen something like with the healthcare workers, a lot of whom have decided that they mm-hmm. don't want to do that. I understood the people who were apprehensive because of like potential pregnancy, right? Like people who want to get pregnant, people who are pregnant, and they're not sure how this vaccine would then affect them. I totally get that. But like, without some like legitimate extenuating circumstance, man, you better shoot me up.
Well, here's my thing, bro. Where's the line? Like, we talk about, you know, first responders and all this other type of stuff. Like, that's the easy thing to get. The first responders, the older people, the vulnerable people. Adam Silver saying we can't jump the line. Adam Silver don't know where the line is because we don't know where the line is.
Well, I think that for Silver, it got different once we saw so many people voluntarily declining. And we got these stories about these places where they're throwing doses out.
Yep.
You know, and if that's going to be the case, then the NBA has got to be like, no. Let us go ahead and get this. Because the truth is, the NBA, at least as far as players go, they don't need that many doses.
Right.
Right? That's an extra 15 doses per city?
Yeah. I guess theoretically, if you're going to vaccinate the players, you vaccinate the staffs.
Yes. But even then, how many people are we really talking about?
Not
like,
that many.
What's the magnitude? And I wonder
many.
About it, like in some of these places where they're throwing these doses out, they probably got enough to take care of the people that we're discussing that are part of the traveling circus.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I know, it's the perception. You know, what it looks like publicly and,
right.
You know, you're taking away something from people who should have it and everything else.
Yeah,
and
but it's a wrap on that now.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, yeah, right. You're right. In the very beginning, I think that was absolutely the case. But when even healthcare workers are like, nah, I think I'll just roll the dice. What we waiting on? What's our concern?
It's like milk. If you don't drink it, it's going to expire. So if it's just sitting in a lab somewhere and it's going to be useless after a certain period of time, no, we can take those.
Yeah,
we'll pay extra. We'll do whatever we got to do. Is that 1,000 people all the way around?
Yeah.
Maximum 1,000 people, 400 or so NBA players.
I feel like players, coaches, trainers.
Right.
You know, like the support staff that's going around there. So that's like 15 plus like another 7 plus, and I don't know the numbers of the support that's going around or wherever it is, and then multiply that by 30.
Right.
That's in the grand macro scheme. That's not that many people. And no. If it will help show people that it's okay to take this vaccine, then there is a greater good that comes in from it. And, of course, it then makes it easier for them to go get this money because the money thing is real.
Well, when you see all these games being canceled, and I don't know if you saw this, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on a PSA that the league put out. I think it was like Sunday. Do you know that there were people like Kareem's a sellout? I can't believe he's taking this vaccine. And I'm like, are y'all idiots?
Well, here's my question. Was that people or was it bots?
Here's the thing. You have far greater experience in being able to detect certain things than I. These people were getting in full-scale arguments.
Interesting. Yeah, and that happens. I guess the reason I asked that is I don't know anybody in real life who feels that way. Once I start seeing like this raucous energy around something, and I don't know anybody that actually thinks that. Now, there's a selection bias at play, right? Because honestly, I try to keep stupid people out of my midst. So maybe I've done such a good job of it that I have no idea how prevalent they are on so many of these matters. But sellout is a, whoa, like they not trying to take us out, right? Like the Tuskegee experiment. Right. That seems to be, that's the one that jumps out at people. But correct me if I'm wrong, if I got this right on how the Tuskegee experiment worked. They were taking men who already had syphilis. And then rather than treat them, they were experimenting on them. That's not what we're talking about here, right? And so maybe, I guess, their people's argument is they're going to tell us it's a vaccine and it's not really a vaccine. And then they're going to come in here and see how this thing affects us or whatever it is. I'm like, yeah, I guess, right? But let me tell you right now, who has no interest in you experimenting on NBA players with no medicine? Adam Silver, that's who. Like, if you put on your most cynical, racist mind, okay, Adam Silver might be out here trying to find somebody else to experiment on. It ain't going to be the people that they pay all the money to.
This is one of those things where, okay, Peyton Pritchard, all right, walking Tommy Point. Yes, 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 yes. It's the difference between you getting in the front of that line and saying, go ahead and take this vaccine bullet for LeBron. You know what I mean? Like, right. there's no advantage to infecting LeBron with the new age syphilis. Like, this doesn't make logical sense. And that's where I'm like, Bo, I don't know about you. Or I mean, I do know about you. Like, I have not an older parent. Like, my mother is immunocompromised. She's not old, but she's immunocompromised. I've largely stayed away from my mother because of this. I can't stomach infecting her.
Right.
But if you give me that vaccine or you give her that vaccine, all right, cool. We can start kicking it again. Who amongst black folk wants to keep living like this?
Right, right. I haven't seen my parents in a year.
That's
crazy. They went and got their first dose. And it was wild because they went the first day, the one weekend to get it, and there was some computer hassle, and so they weren't able to get it. And then they came back that next go-round. And y'all have heard me talk about my daddy before. He's like, whatever, go ahead. Give me that shot. And I feel like if Mac Jones ain't afraid of what the man going to do to us, y'all might be tripping.
Yeah, Mac is like the biggest revolutionary.
No, Bo,
he might be the biggest revolutionary I've ever personally met in my life.
Yeah.
And if he's like, yeah, shoot this arm up real quick.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody else should be following suit.
Yeah. He's just like, nah, we're not going, this is what it's going to be. But it would be a big win for the NBA if they could just stabilize out the schedule. Because that is where we are now, where they've had to, it's looked a bit like college football. Where it's just like, okay, we don't know if we're playing. We don't know who's going to be playing. But they got to get as many games out there as possible. And that's a part that I feel like I just don't think that people properly appreciate is what the financial stakes have been of this. I did talk to Silver for GQ. I asked him how dire were the financial consequences. He's like, well, I didn't think of them as dire because I think of this as a long-term thing. Oh, okay, so you saying it was extra f***ed up. Got it. Like, when you all of a sudden got to start putting this in the context of the future, you're like, oh, this is bad.
That means the present is jacked. That's what that means. That means in this vacuum, in this 2020-21 world, and you start talking about, well, our projections by 2025, oh, it's going to take you 4 years to get your money back?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You talking about billionaires taking more credit lines?
Yes.
When you saw that, you was like, oh, to make sure these dudes still get paid, not for the now, but for the later. Like, when I saw that for last season, that to me said, oh, your doctors have said that this is going to be so jacked up that you can't have people in the stands. And your doctors have said this is so jacked up that you better get in as many games as you can. And people are tripping on the number 72. Number 72, that's when the TV contracts kick in. That's your regionals, that's your ESPNs, that's your TNTs. They need to get these 72 games in, which means if the Washington Wizards, on the back end of their schedule, if they get 20 goddamn wins, Bo, in the middle of April, they're going to play them last six or seven games. They done missed six games already.
Yeah.
it's going to look like exhibition season. They're going to have the, what's the G League team? The Go-Go's, or you know what I'm saying? Whatever, whatever. Y'all going to be out there taking these L's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because y'all got to get this bread.
Well, one thing I don't think that people understand generally about the NBA is that, like, in a lot of ways, success or failure financially for an NBA team, attendance matters. Like, actually getting bodies into the arenas from year to year matters. This was one of the things with the process, right? Was that there's some financial consequences to this when nobody wants to come watch your team play, especially in these smaller markets where they can't give so much money off of the television deals, and they can't bring people into these arenas. So if they can't get that money, right, they can't get 41 days of overpriced food and parking and everything else. If they can't do that, then they got to do whatever it is possible. Like, I did a podcast with Slate a couple months ago talking about the NFL. And it's always interesting to talk about these things with non-sports people, because I think basically it's kind of easy. Like, this is the way I look at it. When I was in graduate school, a professor that I worked for, he was a health economist. And his thing was, the difference between the public health people and the economists is that the public health people are always trying to figure out how to give the stuff away for free. Whatever it happens to be, they're always trying to figure out how to give it away for free. The economists are always trying to figure out a way to allocate it, right? Because they're operating with an understanding that markets is what dictates these things. And since the markets are what dictates these things, we have to move in accordance to markets. I bring that up because I feel like people who don't watch sports or don't have an investment in it, they're like the public health people. They're just like, well, the best way to keep everybody safe is if we don't play games.
Right. Right.
Which totally, like, yeah, you're right. 100% makes sense. Unless you get paid to play football. Unless you get paid to play basketball. Right? In which case, you're trying to figure out how in the world we're going to get out here and play these games so that we can get this money. Like with the NFL, they're like, no games are canceled. Thank goodness. Because who knows what would have happened? Because a canceled game would have meant them dudes wouldn't have got paid.
Game checks.
Right. They want to play football because they, the same reason that people are still out here on the subway rolling the dice, they're not doing it for fun. They're doing it for money. They're doing it because that's what the stakes are.
Are the subways still, are they back full?
Well, no. They're not packed, right? Okay. But I can say no. Right. I can say no, I'm not getting on the subway. Like that's the thing that I think gets lost, is that there's a measure of privilege in like being able to work from home. For example, like the fact that we can stay around and record these podcasts, you and I can do this. We ain't had to miss a date because they shut the whole thing down, right? That's a privilege that I think a lot of white collar type workers have that they misunderstand about these dudes. They can't work from home. You know, like if people like me, if they told us that we were not able to record from our homes to get this work done, then I guess I'd be buying a car and trying to figure a way to get down to the office every day if those were the stakes. Right. But these other folks, they're just looking at it like, well, you guys just need to stop playing. And I'm like, yeah, but no,
you got to get,
that's not it.
You got to get these games in.
Well, I had a lot of people that, you know, replied after that, because, again, these are non-sports people. They're like, why do we have to have football? I'm like, we don't have to have football in the sense of the world. Right. Now, people I work for, they kind of needed to be football. Like, let's not get this twisted. Right. But it's not like, I'm not like, oh, we have to have football because the world can't survive without football. I'm saying that there are financial consequences that affect the capitalism did not stop because of this, right? The people in the restaurants, they don't feel like working in the back, cooking up the vittles for us, but they got to.
Look, man, we went through 3 months of ESPN Classic, which was what ESPN programming turned into. It turned into ESPN Classic. Let me tell y'all. Ain't nothing like live programming. Like, we can have all the nostalgic shit that we wanted to have, but there is nothing like live programming. There's nothing like, look, once the NBA saw the NFL get through this season, even the way that the NFL kicks it with, what, you know, 50-something guys and a practice squad and all this other type of stuff, and even though the logistics are different because the travel is lessened and everything else, and it's kind of there and back type of thing as opposed to the NBA, which is like up, down, left, right. Once that happened, Ball was like, oh, nah, the NBA getting this season in. There is no way on earth they are not getting all of these games in. You're not, it's not that it's a competition, but once you see that the NFL, which is not supposed to be the league that cares about some of these ancillary issues outside of getting their money. Once they saw that, oh, they got it in, oh, we getting it in, period.
Right.
That's all it is.
But this is the other thing I think is interesting about it is that it's easy to look at the leagues and see them as like exploiting the players in this time, whatever it is. But I also think that a lot of well-meaning people are down to exploit the players, but they don't realize that's what they're doing. And what I'm talking about is the people who are just like, well, you guys need to go back into a bubble. And I'm like, I don't think you understand that these dudes found that to be torturous.
That was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Once-in-a-lifetime thing. Where I just take it and contextualize it in the way that we kicking it. You see these numbers. These numbers are going up and up and up. And that's with restrictions. That's without restrictions, depending on how your state gets down, right? If people with relative freedom who can move around how they want to move around, they decide, oh, you know what, we straight. You going to tell NBA players who have all the usual privilege in the world to say, oh, yeah, y'all go back into this restrictive bubble for months at a time? Oh, no, I'm straight. That ain't happening. That was a once-in-a-lifetime thing that everybody knew was a sacrifice when it was done. It was a novelty. And now that life is going back to normal, you're going to tell them, oh, yeah, after being out for X amount of months, go back in?
No, they decided before they got out they weren't going to do this again.
Not never.
It was just too much.
How can you expect, like, it's not natural.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we can talk all, you know, about Daniel House from the Rockets who, you know, acted a fool and the Clippers who basically did the, we just want to go home. I think we can all agree now watching how the Clippers play now and watching how we saw the Clippers play post game five of that second round series. We wanted them to play the Lakers more than they did. They wanted to go home. It wasn't like, oh, we hate each other. They were like, there is no incentive. There is no great reward for us to stay here, not playing the Lakers, not winning the championship, none of that. The greatest reward is going home. So how about we just speed this process up now and go home? And that's what happened.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready to go? Y'all ready to ride?
You done been at somebody's house a little too long.
Yep.
You know, and you hanging out with some folks, and you trying not to fall asleep. And the second somebody says, "Hey, yo, y'all ready? You ready to go?" You're like, "Yep,
yep."
Thought you never ask. Got my shoes on, got my coat on, got my hat on. Hey, all right, nice to see y'all. I'll see y'all again soon. Peace. Like, damn, you was ready to jump, wasn't you? Yep. That was side of backboard shot from Paul George. Which is symbolic of the bubble. That wasn't Paul George having a crisis. That was Paul George saying, "Get me up out of here. Y'all ready to go? So am I."
Now, we have not gotten to the big NBA news of the last week or two, which is James Harden now plays for the Brooklyn Nets. I watched them play. I was mad at myself yesterday because I lost track and I didn't turn on the game until it was only 2 minutes left. Little did I know that meant I got a full 12 minutes of basketball action because it went to two overtimes in the course of that game. And I don't know what it looked like before, right? Like, maybe you watched it, you could speak to what it looked like before. But at the end, I don't know how they're going to make this work exactly with the Nets. And I say this because, one, they're going to be able to score a lot of points, like in the aggregate, right? Like through 48 minutes, they're going to be able to score a lot of points. But it does appear to be, and in fact, you know what it reminds me of? You let me know what you think about this. They reminded me of the Clippers last year in the sense that it seems to be a go for what you know offense. If you got the ball, you go try to figure it out and do what you're going to do. Now, one thing I noticed from Harden in the little bit that I'd seen them play before this game, and even in this game to a degree, is Harden is going to the basket, but if somebody's open, James Harden is inclined to get you the ball. You know, like if there's not a shot for him, if there's not a good shot for him, say what you want about James Harden, he takes good shots. If there's not a shot for him, then he'll get the ball to Kevin Durant or somebody that's open or whoever it is, right? Kevin Durant, I mean, he's always getting his shot. Kyrie late in that game, it was some interesting decision-making given where they were. And it's like, you got Kevin Durant and James Harden out here. Why in the world are you taking a 16-foot contested turnaround jumper going to the right baseline in like the second possession of overtime?
Because you missed the first part of this game. where Kyrie was taking all the shots early. They made like their first 10 shots of the game and largely on the back of Kyrie because they wanted to get Kyrie involved. So when Kyrie hits those Kobe-esque shots, you know what that means? That means I'm going to be shooting these shots for the rest of the night. You know what I mean? So for him, and he's, I'm going to say the problem because I think.
That's a bit much.
Yeah, right. But you'll understand where I'm going with this. James Harden can play pick and roll. Like you said, he can make the correct decision. Kevin Durant is the most likely person to get lost in an offense, even though he is the person that should be considered most in an offense. He's the person that, all right, you know what, Kyrie, if you got it going, go ahead and do it. He ain't going to interrupt you if you got something going. If Harden is cooking, KD's not going to interrupt. If Kyrie is cooking, KD ain't going to interrupt, even though he's the person who should basically have everything run through him. Kyrie is not that type to say, you know what, I'm going to facilitate for somebody else to cook late, or I'm just going to get out the way and be this decoy to keep it 4-on-3. He's not going to be that guy. He's like, oh, I'm a killer. I'm the guy that's got the bag of moves. Let me show my bag of moves because I am the best option. And most times, he kind of is, except you got two of the best scorers on the face of the earth, and then you.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what this looks like from a roster standpoint. This looks like a super souped up version of the first year of the Miami Heat because the roster construction, where you literally have, who was their point guards that year? Mike Bibby. This was before Mario Chalmers.
Well, Chalmers was there. Never forget this. You know who the starting point guard was night one in 2010?
It wasn't Bibby?
Carlos Arroyo. They signed Mike Bibby in like February or March, and they were so thirsty for a point guard that dude got a standing ovation.
This is what I'm saying. So when you look at their roster, they were one big short with Jared Allen, and then you trade them. So now you got DeAndre Jordan, who ain't the DeAndre Jordan of 6 or 7 years ago who was in the conversation for, you know, best defensive player in basketball. Like, he ain't built to take this load on. So you got issues offensively. You got issues defensively. And the guy that we're going to be looking at a whole lot as it comes later is the coach.
Listen to these minute counts from last night. All right. Now, granted, the game went to double overtime, but they only brought like 9 guys played in this game. Durant played 50 minutes, and I just don't feel like he should ever be playing 50 minutes. Like, you know, given what we know. Jeff Green, 45 minutes. DeAndre Jordan, 24. Kyrie Irving, 48. James Harden, 51. Joe Harris, 42. And when I'm looking at the guys who got the DNP CDs, who is Chioza? You ever heard of him?
Yes. It's a who's who of who. That's what it is. It is a who's who of who is this dude?
There's Bumpy Johnson. Okay. And Landry Shamet. Like, these are the cats that's not. I don't know. How offended do you have to be when you're looking at these dudes putting up 50 minutes and you don't get off the bench at all?
And the thing was, they asked KD about that after the game last night. KD was like, well, most teams only play, you know, 9 guys. You don't really see 10-man rotations. But they don't have a guy coming off of an Achilles. They don't have a guy coming off of a 15-day sabbatical. We don't know what Kyrie was doing to keep his body in any type of shape whatsoever. And the plan was, we're going to play it how it goes. And then Kyrie plays 48 minutes and takes the most shots out of everybody on the damn team. Which, clearly, I'm going to say that there's a depth issue and a trust issue. And you're right. Because I think Kevin Durant is back to being Kevin bleeping Durant.
Yes. And I feel, from watching the bit of the Nets that I have seen so far, James Harden is the point guard.
Yes. No, he is. As he should be.
Yeah. Like, that's the big, like, Harden, again, we've all talked so much about Harden doing all the dribbling and everything else and the way the offense ran, and there are always, like, legitimate criticisms to be had of him in that regard. But when he was with Oklahoma City, he did operate as a playmaker. Like, when it mattered, Westbrook moved off the ball, and James Harden was the guy that was on it.
When you think about it, when they put out San Antonio in 2012, I believe, when Oklahoma City put out San Antonio had won 20 straight games.
Yep.
From the regular season, they had ran roughshod through everybody in the playoffs, won the first 2 games against Oklahoma City, and then Scott Brooks made the 2 decisions of his life. James Harden, you're going to be the fourth quarter point guard, and we're going to run this pin down with you and KD. And that literally, all the variations of that alone, led to them getting to the NBA Finals, in large part due to James Harden. He was a pup, And Kawhi Leonard was a pup, but James Harden was taking Kawhi Leonard to school, ladies and gentlemen, giving him the works. As in the same works we saw Colin Sexton giving Kyrie Irving last night with his own shoes in Kyrie Irving's number, which I thought was slightly poetic. The works.
He was putting them up. Like I'm not as wild about Colin Sexton as a lot of other people are, but I was like, oh, okay, I see you, young fella. Right? Like, he wasn't scared at all, right? Like he was there. And so I'm trying to be careful in how I deal with Kyrie, because it's awkward to talk about him in every way. Like, especially with whatever happened with him being out or whatever it is, where we have to give him a measure of grace because we don't know really what was going on, but we also don't really know what was going on, you know? And so people are going to wind up guessing and assuming and everything else. And it didn't sound like his team had a great idea of what was going on. So like, on one hand, I wish him the best. On the other hand, in terms of analyzing the basketball and dealing with the stuff that we typically deal with, I don't know how it is that the Nets are going to figure out exactly to make this work. Because you were right. To get Harden, they had to give up Caris LeVert. Now, of course, we've learned something stunning about Caris LeVert in the course of that trade, and we wish him the best with that mass that's on his kidney. But they needed like a secondary, somebody that's not Kyrie and James Harden, right? Like that could, you know, score at that on that on those places on the floor and could get shots for everybody else. Okay, they don't have that guy anymore. You were right. They were short a big man, and then they traded Jared Allen. Now, he's tall man more than big man, but still, there's a value to having Jared Allen. They don't have him. I don't know how much you can expect for them to get out of DeAndre Jordan in 2021, right? Whose job seems to be more than anything else to be the coach of the defense.
Yes.
Telling people where to be, telling people where to go, because they're not going to guard anybody. I think they gave up 60-something points in the paint against the Cavs.
Think about it like this, and give Kevin Durant points for saying this, except I think that Kevin Durant believed it was an anomaly. He said, look, the worst offense in the league, the worst shooting team in the league, they just had a night. Okay, while that's true, there will be better teams who won't need to have a night to have a night against you. You know what I mean?
Well, how they had a night against you?
I think they're literally looking at like, well, they were probably juiced up and seeing Kyrie. They're going to rationalize this as being the target for one night. One game sample size. They're not looking at it like we have structural problems that we need to fix. And once again, I beg of the question, because all these dudes last night, to a man after the game, somebody read off the numbers to Kyrie, like, you guys combined for 93 points. Kyrie just started laughing. You know, and you said, they said it to KD, and it was like, yeah, we played well. How do you convince guys who got 30 that y'all didn't play well? You know what I mean? Think about the measure of the NBA, not even the NBA we grew up watching, but the NBA that was around it maybe 15 years ago. If a dude scored 20, you said he had a good night.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now, a dude can score 20 and a quarter, 20 and a half. And how do you rewire, I played well and I had 25 tonight, but we're not playing any defense and I got to give something up? Who's passing up those empty calories, not just for the next dude, but for energy on the other end to commit to making stops? Because short of Kevin Durant, who's not necessarily stopper as much as he is defensive awareness and length.
And versatility.
Who's playing real defense on that team?
Is their best defender Joe Harris?
If that isn't a turn of events here in America, if Joe Harris is your best defender...
Yo, because see, my thing is, I don't know if Joe Harris is a good NBA defender. And I think you'll understand where I'm coming from here. I remember him playing at Virginia, and Virginia was really good at defense, but I can never tell at Virginia how much of that is any individual being that good at defense. You know what I mean? But he was a good defender at Virginia. I don't know how that's translated into the NBA, but I do think Joe Harris, that's the dude that looked around and was like, oh, I know what my role is. I'm going to just wait right here, and if I'm open, I'm going
to
shoot it.
Well, it's two things to that. In Virginia, if you don't play defense, you ain't getting on the floor.
Correct.
Are you in a situation where if you don't play defense, you don't get on the floor? Like, your coach is drilling defense into your head and you don't have a pedigree. You are not Joe Harris. You know, I don't know what type of star recruit he was or whatever, but if you're going to Virginia, you ain't no five-star in all likelihood.
Right, not when he was there.
Right. Yeah. It's been some guys since that's been pretty good. But if you're there at that point, you ain't no five-star. You in the NBA now, and you're Joe Harris on the Olympic team, you know, on the Olympic select team, whatever it was, and you going to Vegas and all that other type of stuff, and you're in that class of player, and your coach ain't making you play defense Are you playing defense? And here's the thing. If James Harden or Kyrie Irving comes into a locker room after a game or at halftime, let's just say y'all getting lit up. Y'all down 15. Y'all know y'all can get back in it. You get a couple stops, a couple scores, be back in it. James Harden and Kyrie come into the locker room. Hey, y'all, we need to play some better defense. If you Joe Harris, anybody else on that roster that's actually playing, what you looking at? Word?
Yeah. Now, word? Now, hold on. Now, here's one thing to be fair to James Harden, all. He is a capable defender.
Yes, because he's big.
And those clips that we had of that one year where he was just out there doing whatever, he has been a much better defensive player since then. You know, like, he's not totally checked out on the idea of playing defense. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of defense he winds up playing. And Kevin Durant, the thing that gets lost in this is Kevin Durant can guard guards. Kevin Durant can protect the rim. Like, in fact, there aren't that many people in the NBA who could guard as many positions as Kevin Durant can. Like, now, I don't know how the Achilles is affecting that part of his game because I haven't watched that close. But I watched it when them cats was trying to come to the rim and do something inside last night. And Kevin Durant's like, no, I'm still seven something. Like, I'm still here. God, I can't believe he's so good. Like, as we go through all this other stuff, I feel like it's been real easy for us across the board just be like, oh, man, Kevin Durant, he's back good as new. Yeah, that too. But, oh, my God, he's so good.
I'm glad we've gotten to that portion of the program. Because after the first game, I was like, oh, this is the dude that, because me and you were having the conversation when he got hurt and was like, you know, he can't become a better shooter. And that's the only thing that kind of people, you know, people who have these Achilles injuries that, you know, you have to become a better shooter. Kevin Durant can't become a better shooter. 18 months off, Kevin Durant looks like the best player in basketball. I'm not afraid to say it. Blasphemous as whatever you want to say. That dude looks like the baddest man on the planet, and it don't look like much of a discussion point, Bomani Jones.
Nobody can guard him. Nobody can do anything with that. I cannot believe. Tore your Achilles. You had COVID in the offseason. You had to take another COVID break. I don't know if he had it, but he had to take the break. And he came back. Killing him.
Not good as new. Here's the thing. Does this Kevin Durant look more fun than the Kevin Durant in Golden State?
Yes. And I think the weight of it being somebody else's team is more than we've really given it credit for being. You know, just the idea that this is Steph Curry's team. I'm Kevin Durant. Like, that was the case in Miami where it was Wade's team, but they were homies, right? And then at some point, Dwayne came and told him, like, look, you got to be the one to go take this over and make it happen. With the Warriors, they were trying to figure out that same kind of balance that Miami was trying to figure out. But I don't think Steph Curry, you let me know if I'm wrong here. I don't think that Steph was in the position to go to Kevin Durant and be like, hey, it's you. You got to be the one to do it. Now, that's not to say they didn't do a lot to try to make Kevin Durant comfortable and try to put him in positions, you know, sometimes maybe to their own detriment. But the feeling I got was never that it was going to be that Steph was over there like, look, you're the man here. You do what need be done in order to make this happen. And that's what happened in Miami. And then they were able to go, like, you know, figure this thing out.
Well, and I've covered Dwayne on the back end of his career when he was in Chicago and we developed a relationship. One day I asked him, I was like, if you win finals MVP that first year, like if you look at that 2011 finals.
Yeah, he was finals MVP.
He was finals. If LeBron is more than a corpse, the Heat win, and Wade is the finals MVP. And I said, do you easily pass that baton over? He said, absolutely not. He's like, that would be tough for me to do. If I did that and we win, what's the incentive for me to do that? I'm like, absolutely. So then take that a step further into Steph and KD. Steph is younger and healthier than Dwayne Wade was. It was much easier for Dwayne to do that because there was advantages to even taking the pressure off of his own body.
Right.
There was no issue. Like, I mean, Steph has had his injuries per se, but there was no advantage in that. So it was going to be a tough long-term fit with KD. And here's the thing. KD is the beacon or the closest thing, and you understand what I'm saying when I say this. KD is the closest thing to a beacon, to a system that the Nets have.
Yeah, because I don't know what the hell their system is. I just see dudes going for what they know.
That's why I asked the Steve Nash question. You know what I mean? And not just in terms of how you juggle these personalities, but what is, like, what is your MO? Like, what are the things that you want to accomplish? So not so that we can know, but for your players to know that if nothing else, here's where we are going. Here's what we are doing to get a bucket. Because everybody's going to go through a dry spell at some point, and it's going to turn into, well, I can get a bucket. I can get a bucket. I can get a bucket. And the last person to actually say that will be Kevin Durant. And the first person who should be considered in that should be Kevin Durant, bruh.
No. He's number one, man.
He better be number one.
Yeah, there's no powwow that we need to have about this one.
No, but I think there is. I think there is.
Not with James Harden, I don't think.
Because James Harden is the new guy.
Yeah.
And when you're the new guy and you come in, you know, off of the situation that you were in, where let's just say, had there been one more practice day in Houston, there was going to be some furniture moving between John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. And I don't, you know, and how that, we know how that might have went. You're coming in as KD's boy. So you're going to be far more inclined to, and you're coming in with the rep. You're going to be far more inclined. Kyrie is, and we're not picking on Kyrie. You know what I mean? It doesn't, and I hope this doesn't turn into being aggregated or framed that way. But it needs to be said to everybody. We need a bucket. We looking a seven, period.
Yeah, it all starts there.
It starts and it finishes there. This dude gets a bucket easier than anybody that I've ever seen do. When you talk about in life, you can say, like, you know, certain people are great at public speaking. Certain people are just great at certain things. Kevin Durant, I can't picture a world where Kevin Durant is not Kevin Durant.
Right.
And that means getting a bucket. He gets it so easy and it's so good. That's why I think this was a trade of excess.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I want to switch gears a little bit. I'm going to do something dangerous. Me and you going to try to talk about the Golden State Warriors without, you know, happening.
As I said, we at the risk of getting aggregated, let's just dive into it.
So I'm going to approach it from a different angle, though, because I am stunned that they are now 8-6. Like, from the way they looked early, and as an offensive player, like as a scoring offensive player, Draymond Green is done. I think that we could probably safely say that. As a contributing offensive player, Draymond Green is still Draymond Green. Like, he came back. Everything seemed to get different for them. Like, they are not a great offensive team right now. Like, I think I just saw something that said that since Draymond got back, they're like 16th in the league in offensive rating or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the number was. But they are so much better with him there as a facilitator. And this interesting role that he's playing now as James Wiseman's uncle, in effect. But Steph is so much better with the presence of Draymond Green. So much better.
And it's not just that. This is the best way I can analyze it and say, I'm a boxing guy. I remember seeing the fight later on in life, the fight between Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray. Well, basically, Sugar Ray stole the fight by getting these 15-second flurries at the end of rounds. Another round in the bag, another round in the bag, another round in the bag. I feel like that's Steph. Where all it takes is just this flurry, two or three threes in a row. It shifts the math on how you defend them. It opens up shots for everybody else. Even if the numbers say Steph ain't having a good night, him hitting them two shots in a row puts the fear of God in you.
Right.
If you look at the raw numbers don't add up to where he was. And the 62-point game sort of skews things because they haven't played as many games. But he puts the fear of God in you. And then you have Draymond. And then you have, dare we say, I can't believe I'm going to say this on Al Gore's internet, Andrew Wiggins being more than serviceable. I won't even say, like, good. He's been good. I don't know if he is good, but he's been good. And maybe that's where Draymond is helping.
And you know how checked out I am on Andrew Wiggins.
Yes.
You're right. He has been good. And Steph this year is interesting. You know, he's shooting like 37% from three.
That's what I'm saying. The numbers don't look like, and I think he's taking like 11 a game or something like that right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's lighting the world on fire. Like, he has these hot quarters. Like, the hot quarter against the Clippers. Well, he lit up the Clippers and reminds you, I'm still that dude. All it takes is one of those. And then not just from the standpoint of, oh, a 20-point quarter puts you down 10 to up 10. Yeah, but it changes how you defend them because you're going to overreact to the fact that he can light you up.
Yeah, well, it's a game-to-game proposition, right? Like, I'm looking at the game log now. So let's look at his game log starting with New Year's Day, right? So 2021 games. I'm going to go in order his three-point makes attempts, right? Mm-hmm. 4 for 12, 8 for 16, 5 for 12, 1 for 6, 9 for 14, 1 for 10, 3 for 8, 5 for 11, 3 for 12, 4 for 8. You see what I'm saying? Like we're going an interesting up and down, but let's look at this the other way. They had a split with Portland. They had a split with the Clippers. They beat the Lakers. They beat the Raptors. They also lost to the Pacers.
The Pacers are good.
Yeah, but I don't know what to I don't know what to make of them, but I think that they are definitely more competitive than I thought that they were going to be when the season started.
Well, I'm going to say this bad word, but Amari's going to get us in trouble. The Steph system, it kind of helps. Whether that's a floor raiser or a ceiling raiser, the Steph system of, okay, this is how we're getting shots. This is how we're going to play. Like, when after watching the Brooklyn game, I watched Golden State, and I was like, oh, they look like Golden State. That ball was popping. Like, the complications of the offense look simple. And you're right, it's a game-to-game thing. But you tell me, if you guard Steph Curry and he's 1 of 5, you leaving him?
Right, right. And but again, this is the importance of Draymond. If Draymond's not out there, there's nobody else that can help Steph get a shot. Because what Steph is not the guy that you can ask to do is to make all the shots and make all the passes. That's not going to work. Draymond being there to help get the ball to other dudes, help get the ball to James Wiseman, and then tell him what he's supposed to do when he gets down on the floor and everything else. Like, they are going to be really interesting to watch as it goes. And next year will be interesting with them because apparently the Achilles is not the death sentence that it used to be. John Wall, like, he doesn't look like the best we've ever seen of John Wall, but he doesn't look like, damn, that dude just had an Achilles injury. You know what I mean? Kevin Durant looking as good as we have seen him before. Most encouraging thing for a Warriors fan has to be that combination of things.
And here's the other thing that I think people have forgotten. Not that you forgot it. They also have Minnesota's number one next year.
They do.
From the Wiggins trade. In a better draft. Right? So not only are you in a position to be relevant now, the biggest jump that most guys make are between year one and year two. Right? Especially for bigs. So if Wiseman is this type of dude, and I think he's going to be really, really good, right? Like, I think the people who are saying they should have drafted LaMelo Ball, I think that's a little bit short-sighted. Although I like LaMelo Ball in the way that he's playing. No.
Now they took the right guy.
James Wiseman is real. You slide all these other guys down a peg when Klay Thompson comes back. You slide Andrew Wiggins down to less dependency on him. You slide Kelly Oubre to less dependency on him. And then you bring in a fresher Klay Thompson, even though I think there's a little more variance on how Klay plays because he has to slide his feet and everything else defensively. Yeah. You know what I mean? Everything else. But I think you're right. This is just a whole year. Like, I thought it was over. It ain't over. Not to sound like Teddy Riley. It ain't over. I think they got a chance. A lot of stuff got to break.
Well,
a lot of stuff has to break.
They got a chance to be a good team in the West. They are not going to be better than the Lakers.
No. Here's the thing. The thing that would scare me, you can say this about LeBron to a much different extent, to a greater extent, but Steph can steal you a game.
Yes.
Stealing a game in the playoffs means you can steal a series. If you're good enough to hang around in other games, you can steal a series. Like, Steph stole them a game in L.A.
Yeah. I couldn't believe they won that game. Like, they were up. The Lakers were up so big, I was like, cool, all right, I'm going to go ahead and lay this down. And then I woke up, I was like, what do you mean the Warriors won?
And it wasn't just Steph because the numbers weren't, like, astronomical. But when Steph has this opportunity, and we have these weird Steph moments where you're like, man, you throwing left-handed hook passes to nobody. You know what I mean? And stuff like that happens, like you said, the 1 for 10s or whatever. But then you have these games where you can see that he senses, oh, we down 5 with 3 minutes left. Oh, that's 2 shots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you can see him doing the numbers in his head, like, all I got to do is hit one. All I got to do is get the right screen, the right switch, and boom, he got the best defensive player on basketball on him. And Anthony Davis, all the length, all the height, splash. Like, oh, okay, this is what this is.
Yeah.
It's not every night, but it's on a given night in a given spot, and that should scare the shit out of people.
Yeah, he can still tilt the floor, man. Like, that is never going to change, is his ability to tilt the floor. that part is never going to get flipped up. So, yeah, I want to see how they do with this as that year goes on. Now, let me switch it back to the East. Something I'm curious about your thoughts on is, so what does all this mean for Milwaukee?
Here's the thing. I don't know, because if you look at it, and I thought about this last night, there are legitimately four teams that you could say, let's say four. Four teams, and not even counting the Miami Heat, because I haven't seen them healthy. I haven't seen them together and all the way right. But there are four teams that I can say, okay, if they get to the finals, if at this point you fast forward to June or July and you tell me Philadelphia has made the NBA Finals, I can say that's reasonable. If you tell me the Boston Celtics have made the NBA Finals, I will say that's reasonable. If you tell me Milwaukee or Brooklyn, I will say that's reasonable. That means you better be good. I'm going to bring this to you, Bo. Have the Milwaukee Bucks done this all wrong on Giannis?
How so?
In terms of making him a free throw line and out player. Should they have focused on making him a free throw line and in?
That's a good question.
And just inverting how you do the player development. Because the shooting thing ain't there, and he's taking five a game. He's taking five threes a game right now. That's not the best allocation of how he should be playing right now.
Well, he's not Kevin Durant, right? And you can't expect him to be Kevin Durant just because he's 7 feet and possesses some of these qualities. Because like, this started with Jason Kidd, who basically was running Giannis as a point guard there for a while. But in the way that they run offense, it's requiring him to be a player that he is not. Because my thing with him has always been, it's the same thing I say about Ben Simmons. I don't think that Ben Simmons needs to be a three-point shooter, but I think he needs to be a credible threat when he shoots. And I do think we've reached the point now where Giannis, but it is like, you got it, big dog. Put it up.
I mean, I forgot who it was that was guarding him. And they gave him all the space, all the disrespect. He was literally standing at the three-point line, and it had someone below the foul line. It was literally 1994 illegal defense. Like, you're not supposed to play somebody that way. Nobody's supposed to be that open. So my question to you is, oh, as opposed to let's make Giannis a three-point shooter, how about we make Giannis a 15-foot baseline shooter?
Yeah.
And that means he's closer to the bucket. That means one dribble and he's at the rim, right? That means if you double him from any point on the floor, you're getting an open shot either off the first pass or off the second pass. You still got room for cutters. And I'm not sitting up somewhere saying that the Milwaukee Bucks have done a disservice to Giannis in terms of their player development, because he's been an elite player for about 5 years now. But right. When you've been an elite player for 5 years, that means that you are going to be subject to a certain level of scrutiny now that elite players are subject to. And I don't know if him getting any better makes Milwaukee that much better when it counts.
Yeah, and I think that what you're pointing toward in this is us collectively having our heads up our keisters, where we take a dude like Giannis and our first thought is not get on the block. That big, that strong. That's where they do that.
6'9" or 6'10", long arms, not necessarily a graceful touch. How about we put you close to the rim?
Hold on, and strong like bull. He's so strong.
And remember, Giannis was a string bean when he came into the league.
Yeah.
So he built himself up to be someone capable of playing in the post. Like, I don't know what Giannis would have been in the 90s. I have no clue what Giannis would have been in the 90s, except the power forward.
Ooh, see, I actually think he would have been a center in the 90s. I mean, he's about the same height as Alonzo Mourning.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think he's lighter on his feet, so I felt like they would probably put him more at 4 than 5. Because I don't feel like he's girthy. You know what I mean? Like, he's strong like bull, but he ain't, like, wide.
Right. Well, he is in the shoulders.
Yeah, but the rest of his body is cut.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, Alonzo got, you know, 250, yeah, 250 look different on everybody. You know what I mean? That type of thing.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But I do feel like if you put Giannis with the length of his arms and with the skills that he does have, he would be like a 4-5 type of player. But offensively, he'd have been having to get his buckets on the block.
He'd have been Kevin Garnett.
Now, see, that
Minnesota,
would be interesting.
Minnesota Kevin Garnett.
Right, but what's interesting to see about Giannis is that his offensive game, and this is not a knock, but it is still not as refined as, say, 2000 Kevin Garnett, who might have had the best post moves in the league.
Yeah. The footwork and the length.
It was him and Tim Duncan, basically, in terms of footwork.
Yep.
That dude, Kevin Garnett played two guard. He had a game where they were like, you're the starting two guard today.
I mean, if you think about it in a functional way, Kevin Garnett, it was maybe, I'm going to say Giannis before Giannis because I hate doing stuff like that. But they didn't stretch the limits. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, KG, you can play two, but we're not going to make you be the functional point guard because you shouldn't be making a 7-footer or a point guard.
And there wasn't the push to you have to now make threes.
No.
Right? Or just add this to your game. Just take it one more step back. That's it. Just like eventually Blake Griffin, for example, is a guy like this who we watched his game step out and became more of an 18, 19, 20 foot shooter. And then it was like, okay, now we're going to take this out to three. No one was pushing Kevin Garnett to do that. That just wasn't what the paradigm. I mean, it's the same way we talk about with Larry Bird. Larry Bird shooting 1-3 a game. That's preposterous. And that was Larry Bird.
Baddest dude on the planet. Taking one. I think the most threes Larry Bird took was like 3 a game or something like that at some point in his career. Maybe, and that was maybe like later, like post-prime Larry Bird. That was like when his back started breaking down, and as opposed to me just playing out the box, I'm just standing out here and take a couple extra threes a game.
10 years ago, Steve Nash wasn't taking enough threes.
Absolutely. Look, and Giannis is not taking 5 a game.
Right. Like, we're doing this wrong. We maybe have gone a little bit too far in how we do this. Because my thing is, take the 5 a game if you're making 35%. Or even if you're making 33%, maybe, you know. But that don't seem to be what we got here.
I think he's at, I haven't seen the numbers, and maybe I'll pull it up. I feel like he's at like 28.
Yeah, nah, it can't be that.
And put it like this, the fact that mentally, I think other teams are saying, oh yeah, take that.
Yeah, you got it.
He's at 31, he's at 30.8. When you're that good, close to the rim, no, I'm straight. And put it like this, I'd rather him be him than Ben Simmons, right? Let's make it clear. I'd rather you be experimental and not being scared to take those shots.
Right.
But at the same time, you are much better served closer to the rim. Like when teams see you stand at 3-point line and basically, what's that? Like an old car. You hear that old car starting up. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the next door neighbor about to leave. All right, cool. That's what Giannis looks like. Like, oh, that 87 Chevy is better him than being that 2021 Mustang going to the bucket on my ass.
Right. Now, as we're on this, I ask this as we start to run low on time. At what point are people going to start looking at Luka Doncic and being like, all the threes you want, buddy?
Oh, I think we're already there. I don't know what his numbers is. I know he's like 29-9-9, but his shooting numbers ain't great.
No, they're bad. There's no other way to put it. His shooting numbers are bad, and he shoots so many of them. Like, I understand all the excitement that's generated around Luka. Some of it makes me a bit uncomfortable, but he's cold. Like, it's not like this is a dude who is not good at basketball. But this is also a dude that shoots a zillion threes a game and doesn't make them.
Oh, he's at 27% on 7 a game.
And that's up on the percentage and down on the attempts from what I was seeing earlier this year.
Look, I said it last year when he was giving the Clippers the work. I said he's a much more offensively inclined Jason Kidd. He's so much better when he's just putting pressure on you because he's so big and strong.
Right.
Be big and strong. That's the advantage. Put your shoulder into people. Use your footwork. When you're taking step back bad threes, you are giving defenses like, whew, well, I'll take my chances.
But what is so wild to me about it is people act like this isn't happening. Like, there's an obvious hole and flaw in his game, which is his three-point shooting. And I understand that, generally speaking, they were so good offensively last year, like one of the best offensive teams you'd ever seen, that it almost feels like nitpicking, except for the fact that last year you had Luka out there shooting 32% from three on 9 a game. What?
You know what I'm saying? Don't take threes. Don't take 9.
No.
That's negligent.
And what we're saying is anybody that's out here shooting 7 threes a game at 28% is doing something wrong, period. We would never let Russell Westbrook slide for that.
No, we would. Oh, my God, that's a great comparison.
We never would. Now, the difference is Doncic takes much better two-point shots than Westbrook did, right? Like, that was the thing about it for him is that his two-point field goal percentage for all his career is good. Like, I don't know if it's ever going to be like it was last year. He shot 57% from two last year. That's a bit much, right? But he takes better twos than Westbrook did, certainly. But this is a lot of threes to not be making, and this seems like something that the league can adjust to.
I mean, here's the thing. I think largely, and you can go up and down history, shooting or shot selection is a function of people's critique of decision-making. And people don't consider Luka Doncic a bad decision-maker because he's a great passer, because he can see the floor, because he does all these great things. It doesn't fit into the discussion of a bad decision-maker. It's that he's a bad shooter, and he shouldn't be shooting. And this other thing, that he's white and people think that he's Larry Bird and they, you know, all that other type of stuff too. It's ridiculously bad.
I ain't never seen a season where it seemed like everybody in the media was walking in saying who the MVP was going to be before the year started. I've never seen it like it was walking in this year with all the people telling you Luka Doncic is going to be MVP, which is uncomfortable because it's all the people who were doing the voting. It was almost like they had decided before we walked in here, Luka Doncic ain't about to be no damn MVP.
You're talking to someone who has to do these preseason predictions, and I said, oh, Luka's going to win MVP. Not that he's going to be the MVP, but he's going to win the MVP because of what you just said, because of what he did in the bubble, because nobody's going to give it to Giannis, because nobody's going to give it to LeBron unless you're giving him like a lifetime. He's not going to play hard enough throughout the course of this season for him to get it, and because nobody really thought that Steph or KD was going to be great enough to get it. And we have yet to talk about Joel Embiid.
Yeah, as I was about to say, now Joel Embiid right now looks like he will be the dude who wins the MVP, right? And the thing we always have to remember about Embiid is top five defensive player in the league.
Yes.
At least.
Top three. He's been on my ballot. I feel like he's been on my ballot at least like the last 3 years for best defensive player in basketball.
Yeah, like, I mean, I remember, I think I told you about this. In fact, I think you were at the same game. That playoff game, I think it was game 3, Nets and Sixers a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Where Embiid was obviously, like, he put on some weight. He obviously was not feeling well. He was not contributing anything really on offense and was just, he was like a solar eclipse. Like, once he was out there and in the lane, there was nothing anybody else could do.
You don't get how massive he is until you remember how, or until you see a picture of how skinny he was when he came into the league. Because he looks massive now, but it looks natural. He just looks, it's like whether it's Daryl, whether it's Doc, whatever it is, maybe it's his own personal maturity. Maybe it's just good coaching or competent coaching.
That's what I was about to say.
You know what I mean? Maybe it's competent coaching.
More Brett Brown. You know, and some guys like, you know, Doc and Daryl both being in there, we ain't got to put up with what these other cats is putting up with.
He just looks so good, man.
But what about his boy?
Well, I've said that Ben Simmons has been the same player that he's been since he came to the league, except he regressed. Like, he's now looked like he's, like, regressed. That's why if I was Philly, I would have been doing everything I could to get James Harden. I think if they got James Harden, as much as Philly fan thinks I hate them, as much as people think I hate James Harden, that team was going to the finals at the least with James Harden in Philly.
It's an interesting question.
I think it would have been no question. And you're talking to somebody who thinks Kevin Durant is the best player in basketball. And I would have said, those two guys playing like that, once they got it together, you had the shooters, you got the size, just enough defense, just enough rebounding. Oh, I thought they'd go into the finals.
Do you know how many shots per game Ben Simmons is putting up this year?
It's like nine?
Nine. 8.8. And his field goal percentage is lower than it has ever been.
And look at the numbers from his first few years. There's no variance across the board. He's the same exact dude that he's been since he came into the league. And then he took a step back. Now compare that to a guy like Jaylen Brown in Boston, a guy that we did not think or we weren't sure of could become an elite player when he got out of Cal. And he's turned himself into an elite player and gave Ben Simmons the works. If that was the game he was watching, I wanted to switch when I saw the highlight of him telling Ben Simmons he was too little.
Oh, that was crazy. I couldn't believe that. I saw that. I was like, because I remember I looked up at the TV, I saw the shot, and I saw him do the too little, but I wasn't paying attention to who was guarding him. Then I was like, whoa, wait a minute. That was wildly disrespectful, son.
And think about it. If you Jaylen Brown, and you in here putting in the work, and then you see Ben Simmons who came in here with the pedigree, oh, you got something special for him. You got something real special for the likes of Ben Simmons. Like, there, look. Yeah. Look, I don't know if Boston can get to the finals because I don't know if they have – it's crazy, as great as both of those are. Can they be your best player and get to the finals? I'm not sure. But the fact that they got – dudes got something for a guy like Ben Simmons, and they know you ain't been working, and they know that you scared to take threes. Oh, no, they got something for you.
He will not be on the Sixers next year.
All right, I can see that.
I feel pretty confident saying that. He's not going to. If this season continues to track as it has, then they're going to get him out of there.
I think here's the thing. If Embiid is as great as he is now, and he's consistently this great, and his back holds up and his body holds up, you owe it to his greatness to go for it.
I agree.
Because guess what? You got Philly. You got Milwaukee. You got Brooklyn. One of those teams is not getting out of the second round this year.
Yep.
At least.
And if that team is not Brooklyn, right? Because Brooklyn's got a different story than everybody else does. Otherwise, it's going to be some furniture moving. Like, things have to change. Things have to be rearranged. And the best way for the Sixers to get better is probably to trade Ben Simmons. Because this is actually, I think, the worst thing to happen for Ben Simmons. The Sixers went and hired the Tobias Harris whisperer. Ooh. Right? And so Tobias is out here like, yeah, told y'all. Right? Remember me? Remember this? And Ben Simmons, meanwhile, under the new regime, it looks worse than we've seen him.
And doesn't look. And I think, at the least, Ben Simmons is like a top 10 defensive player in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Like, at the least, all he had to do was be competent offensively. And they've given him all the time in the world on the kindergarten plan.
Yeah.
Like, he's in a postgraduate course now. Because they got dreams.
They do.
They can see the finals. You can see the finals. When you got Joel Embiid, as much as we talk about, you know, league going small, you got a dude that plays that close to the basket, being that big, that strong, that good. Oh, we got an advantage now.
By the way, in case you did not know, Tobias Harris, 50% from the floor, 41 from three, and looking like 90 from the free throw line. Now, granted, he doesn't actually shoot free throws, but Doc, that is not good for Ben Simmons. That's all I'm saying, is that Doc is like, no, I know what to do with this dude. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with him.
I mean, and here's the thing. We see that sometimes Doc has a history of not necessarily connecting with certain dudes. Paul George is one, and depending on who you talk to, there are underlying reasons for why that connection did not necessarily work.
The game within the game.
Do your Google.
The game within the game.
There's no game within the game with Ben Simmons, but there is a, look, man, you ain't going to be the spare tire that's dragging us along here. Because right. Philly got everything, if you look at. They got everything from even a traditional standpoint that we think about a contender needs. They got the size. They got the shooting. They got the versatility. The only thing they don't have is a dude that's really going to get you a shot late in the shot clock from 20 feet and out. That's the one. But if you giving the ball to Embiid on the block and saying, big man, take us home, all right, I'll do that.
And that's why Ben Simmons ain't going to be playing there next year. Because the only way to get that guy that we talking about is put a stamp on Ben Simmons and see what comes back. And it's not because I think Ben Simmons is a bad player. All right, like, I used to go through this fight with Pablo all the time on High Noon, where every criticism of Ben Simmons was, you guys act like he's terrible. No, we act like he's afraid to shoot. And that is terrible, being afraid to shoot.
Yes.
He's not terrible. That's terrible. And it's going to interfere with the ceiling of this team. And Daryl going to get him out of there.
Ben Simmons for Jamal Murray?
Ooh.
Would you do that?
I would consider it, except I don't see the purpose of having Jokic and Ben Simmons.
That's a great point.
Jokic, all that stuff you want Ben Simmons to do with the ball, distributing and playmaking, Jokic got all that under control. He might even be better at it.
What team would you say, all right, I will take Ben Simmons and trade my best player to get him, to turn my team over to Ben Simmons? Because if you get Ben Simmons and you want to maximize him, you have to turn your team over to him, because if he is not featured, he is invisible.
The team that should have done that was the Houston Rockets. They decided they wanted picks. I would have rather had Ben Simmons. Personally, I'd have rather had Ben Simmons. But that's me.
I wonder if that was John Wall, Ben Simmons, two clutch clients on the same roster, not being able to really do it.
I wonder if that was Tillman really not wanting to do no business with Daryl Morey.
Oh, that's absolutely what it was.
Like, there's that too. So much drama because it's the NBA. All right, that Vinny Goodwill. Check him out, Yahoo Sports. Covering the NBA, my man, greatly appreciated.
Always fun. Thanks for cracking on me being a little bit, you know, thicker. I appreciate that.
I mean, I did that before the podcast got started to try to save your dignity. But now that you put it out there, you know, the folks going to notice you squirreling a little bit. But it's cool. It happens. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time to Do This Thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassang, Tarika Foster, Christina Buswell handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you guys. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.